Late Night Conversations, Monday to Thursday, 10 p.m. till midnight.
This part of the program is not suitable for sensitive listeners and for anyone under the age of 18. Note that the views expressed on this show are not that of the station or the presenter. Closet Conversations.
Well, A-teamers, since the Tuesday, we focus on society, on family, on individual. And this evening, we're joined by Dr. Mpumelelo Ncube, who's the head of department and also senior lecturer at the Department of Social Work for the University of the Free State. We're talking about an article that he has penciled down, titled Celebrating a Distorted Notion of Unity in Diversity During South Africa's Heritage Month. Dr. Ncube, thank you very much for joining us. Good evening.
Good evening, Dr. Sebingelela, Ninja Nong.
Yo, yeah, I know. Siyaphila, we are grateful that we are with you once again. We are glad that we can play African music in our various languages here at SAFM.
That's important. It's important, and we can't afford to have a cleavage between ourselves and this that defines us, you know, culturally. Listening to this music, it revives the soul. You know, you don't have to be told that this is our music, this is our African music. You just feel it within you, totally.
So, ake sikhulume-ke about your article, because your article says, no man, we are celebrating, but not all is well. How do we celebrate a heritage when there's so many challenges?
Yeah, in actual fact, there's quite a lot, that ought to be celebrated, especially when we talk of, celebrations, within the celebration diversity, our diversity. There's quite a lot of things that, are unique to each and every one of us as a people within the same nation, and all these things need to be distorted. But then I pose a question and say, if we do not become critical about what it is that we're celebrating, unfortunately, we may lose ourselves in the process. So we need to be critical and pose this question that says, what is this that we're celebrating? Is it meant to be celebrated, especially looking at how distorted things are? And when we're talking of things being distorted, we need to say, but first of all, what is heritage? What is this that must be known as heritage? To us, heritage will refer to culture. It will refer to traditions. You know, I talk of monuments, knowledge, this knowledge that we have as a people, including land as well, our land and belief systems, amongst other things. So these are the things that need to be, that is supposed to be our heritage. But when you get to look at this very closely, you realize that quite a lot of this has been distorted. So we may want to speak about this tonight.
Well, we need to speak about the distortion, where it originates from, right? Why is there distortion?
Yes. Yes, it's important that we reflect on exactly where this distortion comes from. And in this article, I also indicate, well, basically it's an article that emanates from the research that I'm doing, an empirical study that I'm working on, where basically you're looking at the way in which Africa has been distorted, basically, especially from the colonial times. You know, from the colonial times, quite a lot of things have changed. If you're looking at our cultures, the things we do in the name of culture, you realize that basically they do not resemble what it was originally. Some of the things we claim to know them, when in actual fact what we know is the distorted notion thereof, the traditions and so forth and so on. So colonialism has dealt a huge blow on us as Africans. It's a huge blow. And some people say, but how many years after colonization happened to us as a people and we're still crying foul? Unfortunately, you know, when we're looking at colonization, it was a system that was designed in such a way that there will come a time where you do not need an individual to stand in front of you physically, but the system will run itself. So we are in this current space now where the system is actually running itself. We are looking at the various matrices of power, which is what I also talk about, you know, the coloniality, what we refer to as coloniality, the coloniality of being, the coloniality of knowledge, and the coloniality of power. This is the space where we are. And unfortunately, it is this that controls us in almost everything that is happening in our lives. We're thinking that this is us, when in actual fact it's a distorted notion. Just this past, was it Saturday, when we were celebrating the Heritage Day? I attended a family gathering. It was a wedding, actually, of my cousin. So when I was there, I looked at people. The theme was actually African attire. People were donned in their African attire, so totally. They were so beautiful. They looked lovely. But I then saw a certain level of contradiction. You know, that was contradiction personified, where people are donned in this African attire, especially for females. But I realized that on their heads, they were carrying your Brazilian, your Peruvian, your Indian, they had all sorts of hairs. And I was like, what is this? Yeah, so it is such a contradiction, totally.
So there's clearly something that went wrong. And when I think of the language issue, it is one issue that we ignore when it comes to our heritage. We feel as if we are progressive when we are not speaking English. And when we speak English incorrectly, then we are no longer progressive. We judge ourselves. And this is where we are right now as a people. Are these the traits of a system that is now running itself, where we lose the language, therefore it makes it easier to lose the culture?
Yes, and as we indicated, totally, it was deliberate for us as a people to lose language. And just this other day, you know, we're talking about, you know, the departure, isn't the death of the queen. And I remember one of the clips that was played, it was the queen when she was here in South Africa, and she was saying, "I feel at home when I am here." And in fact, the reason why she will say she feels at home is because the system was created for her to feel at home. When she is here, or when she was here, she didn't have to change her language to try and be understood. The people around her had to change their languages so that she will understand them. And she had to continue using her language because she knew that the system was designed in such a way that these people will understand me when I speak to them. So that was designed in that way. So currently, as you are indicating, unfortunately, whoever tempers with your language, just know that they are actually degrading you, they are demeaning you, they are actually taking your identity. And there's quite a lot that is attached to language. And here I say language is one critical aspect of people's heritage. So once you remove it, you've actually removed their being, you've removed their identity. And I also say, you know, when as far as language is concerned, language controls one's understanding and how you understand the world and how you view your creates your world view as well. So and it also creates the extent of your development. And I say this because I say language, one's ingenuity or the country's ingenuity, the nation's ingenuity. And when I speak of ingenuity, it speaks to, you know, your inventiveness and originality. So you cannot be inventive, because for you to be inventive, for you to be original, you are using language, you are using concepts, and you cannot, you know, begin to use language when you haven't mastered it correctly. For starters, this language that we're speaking in, English, we haven't mastered it to the depths that will allow us to be innovative. And now, let us go back to our language and try to be innovative in our own languages, we are now struggling, because look at your own children, look at your own nieces, they struggle, including ourselves. You struggle to start, you know, sentence and complete it in your mother tongue. So that's the extent to which we've been damaged as a people.
It's a serious damage. How do we then right the wrong? How do we ensure that we change the trajectory?
It has to be a deliberate action to change it. It won't happen on its own. It has to be a deliberate action. I remember at some point in time, we even spoke about, you know, re-engineering the whole society. And, you know, when we say re-engineering the whole society, the people, for starters, need to be mindful of this colonial metrics of power to understand exactly how the world is, the current world order, how it is being run, how it is being managed. And once we understand that, then you'll begin to see a revolution. People have to, you know, be it must be a revolution led by the people, and of course there must be leadership in that. Now you're looking at a situation where, especially in the production of knowledge in the university city spaces, we're supposed to say, instead of only clinging onto one language and say the students or our children must be taught in one language, we must begin to bring in to the center our languages and say, why should one conduct research in one language or in English? Shouldn't it be that students are given the right to conduct research in their own languages? And so in universities are beginning to gravitate towards that particular notion. For instance, if you get to see what is happening in UKZN and in my own institution, we are engaged now in these discussions where we say, let us try to bring into the center these languages, so that once we do that, once we begin to produce knowledge using our own languages, then it will be so much easier to begin to change quite a lot of things. At the moment, for as long as we center English, for as long as we center French or whatever Western language, unfortunately, we are pushing ourselves further and further away from the center. So it starts there. And maybe not to say it starts there. That's one area that we need to put focus. But again, we need to look at what is happening in our own homes, where what kind of language are we speaking? We seem to be taking pride if our children are speaking, English with so much fluency. That on its own is an indication of a distorted notion of people's lives. So we need to say, we need to resist as parents. But parents will tell you that, how can I resist when the system requires of my child to speak English? When they move out of my home, they are required to speak English. When they go to a workspace, they are required to speak English. So there are all these centers, all these strategic areas, the way we need to begin to effect change and say, no, we need to see power in our own languages. It is only then that we'll begin to see the real change, development in our nation. So these are some of the critical areas that we need to look at, certainly.
And it's going to need a lot more than just one individual, Dr. Ncube, to write an article. It's going to need a conscious effort from absolutely everyone. But then someone else might come up with the argument to say, but then Dr. Ncube, if we're all speaking our various languages and we don't use the lingua franca, being English in our case, because that's how we were colonized, how will we then communicate?
Yeah. And you are posing this question. So actually, just 2 weeks back, I was making a presentation at a conference, and one of the colleagues said to say, you know what, universities won't manage to employ all people with different languages to come and teach and so forth and so on. In my classes, so to all, I've got students from different backgrounds. They speak all sorts of languages. So, and while I fairly understand most of the languages, I don't speak all of them. I'm only limited to a few of them. But then that does not limit me from inviting my students to think and argue in their own languages. In an event where I don't understand the language, one of the students in my classes will be in a position to explain what is being said. So I'm saying this, one will say, but I only speak English and I can't afford to run a class of students who are speaking Venda, Tswana, Zulu, and so forth and so on. Let the students be free to speak their own languages. And if you don't understand, somebody is bound to be in a position to explain to you. Then in that way, you begin to be to have a class of students who are engaging meaningfully. And the depth of the engagement, you'll be surprised on the depth of engagement, because I've experienced this, I've put this to practice. It works. But the minute you say to your students, we are only using English, let us only engage in English, you realize that the depth of the discussions are very shallow. Or sometimes you have students who want to contribute, but they do not contribute. Sometimes when they engage in the discussions, you realize that, but the students, they're speaking of something as if they don't know it. Why is it that they don't know it? Because they don't have the vocabulary of it. If you say speak it in your own language, you realize that they say, but you are speaking about something that I know. We know this. We grew, speaking this language in their own languages, and they've got the terms for that. So in that way, you know that now they understand the subject that you're talking about.
Yeah, Dr. Ncube, I remember in my schooling days, primary and high school, there were prefects, right, who would walk around during break to just bust and make sure you get attention for speaking vernacular. It was, oh, you speaking vernacular, you're gonna get detention. And that's how we grew up, right? And because of that, a lot of things were also frowned upon. I mean, the language aspect also goes hand in glove with the hair issue. So we still have schools that don't embrace hair, that is non-Eurocentric. We still have schools that don't embrace iziphandla, you know, or any traditional, you know, pieces on us. And I think it all emanates from language. But we are celebrating heritage. It's a show off, especially on the 24th. We are all dressed in our African regalia, but not even with an understanding of how deep it is that we have been scarred.
That's very true. And in actual fact, you know, there's the work of Sabelo Kachenindlovu, is a decolonial, a student of decoloniality, basically, where somewhere he speaks of colonialism, and the manner in which he speaks about it, you realize that colonialism is not a legacy. You know, when you're talking of a legacy, you'll be talking of something that has, you know, come and ended. But in this case, Sotole, are you there?
Yes, yes, Dr. Ngobe.
Oh, yes. Oh, thank you. But in this case, you are looking at something that is actually alive, and he will talk of colonialism as less of a legacy and less of an abstract phenomenon, but more of a violent and exploitative reality to its victims. So as we speak now, you know, the mere fact that we're speaking English, this is an exploitative reality. This is our lived experiences on a daily basis. You cannot start your day and end it in your own language. You have to speak, you know, move from your language, speak English, think in English, and so forth and so on. So this is a reality. And as you're indicating that, you know, in schools you'll be frowned upon if you're speaking your own language, the system is ingrained, you know, it is ingrained in our social, cultural, political, religious, and all spheres of life. So it's everywhere. It is everywhere. It is humongous. That's why when you earlier on you indicated that it will take more than just writing a simple newspaper article. And in actual fact, if you get to look at the work that has been done by, you know, other people before us, you know, the likes of Frantz Fanon, your Steve Biko's, Du Bois, and many others, they've done quite a lot of work in writing. But then there's a challenge in saying, while we've got this whole body, you know, of knowledge and, you know, literature that has been written, why is it that we are not moving the needle anywhere? It hasn't moved at all. It is so because perhaps we haven't had the conceptual framework of doing it, and maybe even beyond the conceptual framework, we look at the practice model. How do we decolonize? For instance, how do we decolonize education? How do we decolonize religion? So without these frameworks, unfortunately, it will never work, including how do we decolonize politics? Because we seem to be worshipping politics so much, such that it takes the center stage in our lives on a daily basis. So if we can manage to also decolonize politics and the minds of those who lead us to say, no, you need to understand who we are, and you need to understand how much we've been violated as a people, then you'll understand, only then will we then begin to move the needle. Otherwise, we'll only be paying lip service to this, but substantively, we'll leave these matrices of power intact. That's why even the owners or the beneficiaries of this web of coloniality, they are comfortable. They know that they don't have the power to move it. Why don't they have the power? Because the willingness to change the system is far less than the willingness to sustain the system.
Okay. Let's take a bit of a break and we'll be back. ATMs, remember, you can join in on the conversation. I mean, are we celebrating with an undercurrent of, you know, not really being united with your own heritage and having an understanding with other people's heritage within the South African context? Let me know. WhatsApp 0614-104-107.
Late Night Conversations, Monday to Thursday, 10 p.m. till midnight. Closet Conversations.
We're still in conversation with Dr. Mpumelelo Ncube, who's the head of department and senior lecturer for the Department of Social Work at the University of the Free State. He's penciled down an article around us celebrating a distorted notion of unity in diversity during our Heritage Month as South Africans. Dr. Ncube, Rainbow Nation? Is it just a facade? Is there such a thing? Are we still living in that euphoria?
Yeah. In fact, when we say a rainbow nation, we say rainbow because it has got many colors. Are those colors there? Yes, the colors are there. Is it a nation? Yes, it is a nation. But do we have this oneness? Do we have this unity in this rainbow nation? Unfortunately, it isn't there. One characteristic of a rainbow is that all those colors are brought together for you to see that this is a rainbow. But these colors are fragmented, unfortunately. So it doesn't really create this nice picture that we want to see of a rainbow. Look, at some point in time, you know, we went through a period of apartheid, and when you're looking at apartheid, basically, maybe to put it in simple English, that was apartness, you know, the apartness of people. We need to then begin to question and say, but have we gone beyond apartness? Are we now together? Are we now a unity? Unfortunately, you realize that we are still apart. Of course, in policies and so forth and so on, you might think that we are over that period of apartness, but we are still apart. We are apart in all different forms that you might want to think of. Economically, we are apart. In terms of languages, we are apart. Culturally, we are apart. Everything about us, we are basically apart. And you see people, you know, different groups wanting to come closer together, identifying themselves as individual groups, as opposed to identifying themselves as a nation. Until such time that, you know, we've gone through this process of social re-engineering and we see people coming together to form this rainbow nation in the true sense of it, then unfortunately we'll continue in this dark abyss, if I were to call it in that way. So we do have the different colors, but these the different colors are not brought together. They are not brought together. They are so fragmented, so totally.
So the rainbow nation is still there, but we need to make sure that every color is able to blend and every color can stand out. How do we do that, Dr. Ngobe? It's vital for us to understand how we do it. Where do we start?
Yes, like we said, the theme is celebrating what's called unity in diversity. For starters, we need to embrace our diversity, our uniqueness as a people, as different groups within a nation. We need to embrace and appreciate that. You know, if one were to appreciate the fact that they are blacks, they are black people, they are white people, they are Indians, and so forth and so on, we appreciate that. And in appreciating, in doing so, we should never move towards, you know, seeing you know, one as bigger than the other. At the moment, we are seeing a continued reign of white supremacy, and that is there. And unfortunately, it's an unfortunate situation. It shouldn't be that. When you're looking at your colleague or you're looking at a white race, they should be equal to your race, and the white race should be seeing you as an equal. But at this point in time, no, things are not like that. There are quite a lot of, you know, examples that we can point to that indicate that unfortunately there are certain races that still are superior than others. You know, in the pecking order, the Indians will see themselves as second from white. Then at the bottom you'll see your black race. Unfortunately, for as long as the system is still maintained in that way, then this unity in diversity will just be, like you indicated, a facade. But so while we're looking at a situation where all races are equal and we treat each other as such, and we can never be equal for as long as there's still quite a lot of you know elements of inequality that some of them that we've just highlighted here, and then beyond that, it'll be important that we also look at some other aspects of our lives that actually make us, you know, different, and you know, particularly blacks will be seen as inferior, as it were. So it's important that we identify all these areas. Certainly, we bring them. We bring them together. We address them. We do not only pay lip service, but we address them. We've seen over 28 years some of these things they'll be highlighted, and there will be policies to say this should never be the case. But 28 years later, you still realize that, you know, nothing has changed. Things still remain the same. If anything, there are certain things that we've gone many, many steps back, instead of moving forward, certainly.
This message via WhatsApp from Malo, who's in Limpopo, says, "Good evening. We're exposed to Eurocentric values for many decades, and it will take time to divest ourselves of such values and reclaim our true African traditional values." Mm-hmm. Are we the only country in the continent that is marred in this way, Dr. Ngobe? Are other countries in the continent in a better position?
No, not at all. We're not the only country, and of course, maybe let me start with what the A team is saying. Yes, our lives, we are aspiring. In fact, we are aspiring to be white. If you get to look at the kind of lifestyles that we are living, and it is this that we're saying it should never be the case. Any country, or rather, any nation that does not value that has got no values, is bound to be disinherited of its heritage. And once that becomes the case, we won't have an identity, and we'll just be moving beings without any fixed abode. And if that becomes the case, and that's exactly what the system wants us to be, so that it can be in a position to control us. Because the minute we find our identity, the minute we find our voice, the minute we find ourselves, there will not be the system will not be able to control us. But at the moment, it is good as it is, because we are able to provide labor to the system. We are able to provide resources to the system, such that it so as to sustain this white supremacy. Otherwise, if we were to change this order, unfortunately, this white supremacy falls. And if it falls, unfortunately, it won't be in the best interest of those who've been benefiting from it. But it's unfortunately, it is a social justice issue for this system to be changed. Otherwise, it is, because it is unjust, it is unsustainable. You ask the question of whether we're the only country in the continent. It is the entire continent. This injustice was actually, or this system is actually engulfing the entire continent. And it's not only Africa, by the way. You still have got other continents. If you're looking at Asia, you're looking at South America as well. They're in the same situation as us. But of course, others, they've really tried to move ahead, but Africa is right at the tail end. And as I'm saying, at the moment, it doesn't seem like we are moving anywhere towards addressing these issues in the true sense of it.
Now, I don't know if we are worse than other countries in the continent or we are all on the same level, but the one thing I've noticed throughout the continent, our names are all English names. Our names are, oh, in fact, we call them Christian names. Eli Christian name in the continent. What does this reflect? And it's not that we should not like our names. We've been given names. That's the name you identify with. But what does this reflect about our parents who named us?
Yes, in actual fact, in essence, it is not necessarily wrong. You can give your child a name of any language. If you want French, or if you want Germany, if you want whatever language. If this is an indication that is the black people were able to embrace. But unfortunately, we are the only race that gives our children English names, French names, and so forth and so on. So this should not be the case. If the other races are not willing to embrace our languages and give their children names, African names, then it indicates that what we are doing, trying to embrace, this must also come to a stop, and we should frown upon it. While we were given English names, I shouldn't be given my children English names, because if we are to really resist this system, I should be comfortable with my child having one or two African names, as opposed to saying my child has to have a Zulu name as well as an English name. And when they get to school, you realize that they are only making use of this English name because they are comfortable with it. They are not comfortable with an African name. This is a huge disservice to our own heritage, to our own identity. We are waiting for a day where we'll see our white counterparts, our Indian counterparts, giving their children the African names. Until such day comes, unfortunately, we have to resist a situation where we are actually giving our children. And the other people who understood the power of language within our country would be the Afrikaner people. They understand the power of language. Unfortunately, Afrikaans has got a bad history. That's why each time when they try to accentuate it, then we'll be act in the wrong way. Then we begin to respond somehow. But otherwise, had it not been for that, those are the people who are trying to push their language. They understand the power thereof. And the Chinese also, at some point in time, they understood that for us to begin to change and assume our own identity, we need to do away with using other languages. For instance, as the pillar of their own development. Then they had to, you know, use their own language, particularly Mandarin, and they brought it to the center. Of course, they are making use of other languages as well, but Mandarin is at the center of their development. It is at the center of their own identity. That is exactly what, as Africans, we're supposed to do, Sotole.
Lalela mpangazitha nje ukhuluma like this about the names, you know, and I know I started it, but I remember at school, no one, black, white, Indian, colored, Chinese, no one could pronounce Nonkululeko. And those who attempted made a mockery of the name, and it was a joke. I remember even at some point, you know, going home and crying, and like literally ngembes, now what will I do? I remember working in a company and telephonically introducing myself to the person I was talking to, and they said, "Why are you laughing?" An American person. I said, "I've just told you my name." He said, "But it sounds like you're laughing when you say whatever you just said." Nonkululeko, mind you. Something that happened about a month ago, I had to go fill out a form, and I filled out the form, and the person then decided to, and mind you, a black South African, then called me Patricia, because the form had both my names. First name being Nonkululeko, called me Patricia, and I said, "Why are you doing that?" And I asked them, and this is Zulu. And the response was, "You Zulu people are very violent. You want things your way all the time." In South Africa. Starting here at this radio station, I mustn't get into trouble for this, but I remember being told, "Do not use Nonkululeko and Duli because it's too long. People will not recognize you. So you will use your second name." And even now saying this, it's just, it makes me ask myself, when will things be okay? When will, and I did not hear this maybe from Abantu who are different from me, same skin color, but because we need to sound right.
That's true. That's exactly what we are talking about, Sotole, when we're saying, you know, when we're talking of colonialism as not being a legacy, but as a lived reality, and a very violent one for that matter. It is violent, and it is exploitative to us as victims. Unfortunately, now, when you hear a black person also questioning you why you were using Unonkululeko, or why I'm using Mpumelelo when I can use another, my English name, it can be those people can be pardoned, because that's what the system demands of them. It detects that they think in that way. It is the thinking. They are just in a system that they can't control. But until, unfortunately, we have to then rise and say, no, we have to question this. It cannot continue in this way, because it is violent. It is a violent system, and we feel being exploited. So if we it starts by talking about it, we talk about it, and other races have to understand that, in fact, these people, they are talking about their lived experiences, and it's painful. If they've never experienced it, they must try and understand us from, you know, from the whole notion from our own perspective as a people. So you need to, in fact, Patricia, or rather Nonkululeko, you need to resist when you are not comfortable with Patricia, despite the fact that it's your name. If you're not comfortable, you need to tell people who you are. I've got a situation where I'll have people failing to pronounce my surname. And yet, when I have to pronounce, you know, anyone's name, whether it's in English or in Afrikaans, or I try my level best to pronounce it the way it should be pronounced. And I get it right, because I dedicate myself to doing that. But then you realize that some people are not even interested in doing that. They're not even interested in giving themselves time to say, how do I pronounce Ngube? How do I pronounce, you know, the vowels in there? They don't care. So they would rather call me the way they feel comfortable. And you realize that as people tend to smile and be comfortable with that, and sometimes even assist them to say, no, because it's too long, just call me Mpumi for short, because it's too long. No, call me my name. If you don't want to use my name, you'd rather not speak to me.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a long journey. It's going to really be a long journey. Dr. Ncube, what are your closing remarks as we wrap up our conversation?
Yes, at all. So here, this is an attempt to try and conscientize. Like I said, a lot of conscientization has been happening from, time immemorial. Like I indicated, some of the scholars who have, dedicated their time to writing to try and, open our eyes and let us see the kind of system that we're living in. So as a people, we need to say, and when I say as a people, I'm not only referring to blacks, I'm also referring to Indians, even to whites themselves. We'll understand that whites will be the beneficiaries of the system, but they should be assisting us. They are key role players in ensuring that we actually reverse this whole system to a point that everybody is comfortable. Blacks are comfortable, Indians are comfortable, whites are comfortable, and none sees themselves as superior than the other. And as black people, again, we've got ourselves to try and emancipate ourselves. And like Bob Marley said at some point in time, we need to emancipate ourselves from this mental slavery to of thinking that, so much has been done creating this coloniality, so we've got no power to dismantle it. We've got all the power to dismantle it only if we give it our all and challenge it at all levels. Eventually, we'll get there. For sure.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Ncube. Always such a pleasure. Always such
Highly
a pleasure.
appreciated.
This has been eye-opening, and I'm sure that our A-teamers have learned quite a deal. Let's celebrate our heritage, but let's do it when knowing very well that konke kuhamba kahle, not doing it with all the undercurrents of not really celebrating ourselves. Ngiyabonga kakhulu.
Bonge mina kakhulu Sithole. Thank you very much. Ulale kahle.
A-teamers, oh, what a conversation. Tuesday, done and dusted. We'll be back for the Wednesday edition at 3 a.m. Asanda Peta comes in with Sound Awake from us. May goodness and grace lead you to the great heights of success.